Welcome to A Bit of Insight with Lisa Mosby, your weekly dose of health, wealth, and everything else.
What if the life you keep calling fine is quietly stealing your joy? What if there's more waiting on the other side of stillness, tea, and a little spiritual grit? Today's guest knows exactly how to help you get there, and she's not afraid to shake up your status quo. Hey friends, welcome back to A Bit of Insight, the podcast where we explore what it really means to live well, travel far, and inspire others. I'm Lisa Mosby, your host, confidence coach, and Amazon bestselling author. Today's episode is for anyone who's been telling the world, I'm fine, when deep down they knew something's missing or they're meant for something more. My guest today is Lori Seitz, a powerhouse entrepreneur, transformational life coach, and host of the podcast, Fine is a Four-Letter Word. She's founder of Zen Rabbit and a woman who embodies grace, grit, and grounded wisdom. A communications expert, a master of networking and storytelling, and an unapologetic tea snob, Lori helps people move from quiet discontent into purposeful alignment. Whether she's speaking on a stage, writing copy that moves hearts, or creating community through her podcast, she's leading people home to themselves with kindness, spiritual depth, and the occasional rabbit metaphor. Welcome, Lori. Thanks for being with me today.
Thank you so much. That was quite the intro, Lisa.
Lori and I have not really met before. We were connected through another friend, and I don't often let people give me their bios. I like to look at how do they show up online? How do they represent themselves? And that's how I perceive you. How close were we?
Pretty close. There were some elements that I would make edits to, but yes.
What would you like to add so that the audience has a better feel for who you are and what it is that you
do? Yeah, a lot of what I'm focused on right now is I was doing a lot of the coaching and I'm still doing a little bit of that. And I'm much more focused now on, because I've had such great success with my own podcast, creating internal podcasts for mid-sized businesses. Again, to help with the culture and connection. That connection piece is the through line into everything I've done.
Yeah, the communication piece. I know that you're a master at communication, and I love that. I'm going to ask you about that, like the conscious communication. And corporations are kind of missing the boat on that. You know, mm-hmm. that we're not connecting our employees really all that well. And using an internal corporate podcast is such a brilliant idea. So I do want to go there.
Yeah, we'll
but
get
first,
into it.
When, right. A few things. I love tea. Mine is herbal tea and it's medicinal. I know yours is a little bit different. Why do you call yourself a tea snob?
Back when I started my first business and I was making and marketing this product called Gratitude Cookies, I met a woman at a chamber meeting, and she had a tea company, and she taught me, we partnered on a lot of things because cookies went really well with tea. And she taught me a lot about tea. Yeah. And so she kind of turned me into a tea snob, because now it's like, oh, you're not serving loose leaf tea? Okay.
The bag is for others.
Yeah, exactly. That's what they sweep off the factory floor and put into a bag. I'm not drinking that. So
that's the truth. That's what they do, you guys. If you're listening, that is how where tea bags come from.
Well, Lipton, or maybe some of the bigger companies, let's just say, the more well-known ones. I'm not going to call. Yeah. But I'm a big fan of different kinds of loose leaf tea because she taught me a lot about them. And I became, I don't want to say aficionado. That's a little bit too far. But I do enjoy a lot of different kinds of teas.
Love that. I need to get back into tea. I'm doing mushroom coffee, and I hate to use the word addicted, because that's a dangerous word, but I am hooked. I'm attached to it. Like, I can't limit myself to one cup. I don't know. There's something, it just gives me energy. And herbal tea, I find the same way. You know, okay. we don't need to have sugar or artificial this or that, or there's vibrance, there's life in drinking tea, and it's kind of sat on the shelf. I'm a nomad. I live in my car, and I have about 25 different herbs with me, kind of mix and match and make my own tea. And it's so fun. So when I got to learn that about you, a light bulb went off in me that said, get back to your tea. So I wanted to start there. I did mention that I was a nomad. You were a nomad for 13 months. I'm in month 14. I want to ask you what your greatest takeaway from being nomadic was. How did it contribute to your life?
It was about leaning into trust and faith, because things happened that were not expected and needed to be dealt with. And it was trusting. There were so many nights that I was cat sitting, house sitting and cat sitting, mostly some dogs. But there were plenty of times where I was in between sits. And so I needed to stay at a hotel or an Airbnb. And then there were many times also where there were a couple of nights in between, and I didn't know where I was sleeping that night. Cause situations would come up and I thought I was staying with a friend, or I thought I was staying at my dad's at the time. And then that kind of fell through. And so I was like, ooh, what am I doing? And so having that trust that something is going to show up, and it always, always did. Like this one time in particular, I was in South Florida. I thought I was going to be staying at my dad's. There were some issues around that. And so that wasn't an option. And I was like, I'd already checked out of my hotel and I had this one night and I was like, I don't know where I'm sleeping at. And I was having lunch with a friend. I say friend loosely. I would consider her a friend, but we're not like really good friends. We had just met one time before that and we were having lunch. And I mentioned, yeah, I'm not even sure where I'm staying tonight. And she said, well, I have a guest room. Do you want to come stay with me? And so that's just an example of it just all worked out perfectly. And it was so much fun. And she was so gracious to allow me. And it was fun. You know, it took our relationship to another level of getting to know each other and, you know, hanging out, having dinner and talking over probably tea. But
yeah, the word that comes to mind to me is surrender. Like I've surrendered to this lifestyle that the rules go out the window. I don't have a home. My home is where, you know, I bring my own teacups. I have my own plates. I have my own pillows, my own sheets, my own bedding. Even staying with friends, I pull that stuff out and use my stuff. It's like, I have coffee cups. It's like, you don't understand. There's rootedness in this coffee cup that both my parents passed. And that was kind of the impetus for me to decide to do this. I took care of them for a long time. And I said, you know, now I'm just going to totally be free of all responsibility to the best of my ability. I still have a business, so I have to be responsible. But I have those things for a reason. They're my ground. I wear a lot of hats figuratively and you know, I have one duffel bag that is just hats. I probably have 50 hats and everything I own is in my teeny tiny little car. So having that many hats is kind of ridiculous, but it's something that grounds me. I can put on those hats and it takes me to those memories. So we find the home is within us. And we get to share that home as nomads. We get to share that home with the people that we see and stay with and visit and the places that we visit. And so thank you for sharing your story. People often ask me, why are you doing this? Why did you do this? Did you get that question a lot? And I'm curious what your answer was. Why?
I got that question a lot. And the other thing I got a lot was, wow, you're so courageous. You're so brave. I could never do that. Which is interesting because you could, it's again, it's about surrendering what you think you have to do and allowing yourself to be open to the opportunity to do this. But and I wanted to mention, since you brought up the word surrender, have you read the book by Michael Singer called The Surrender Experiment?
I don't think I have.
It was such a good book.
I thought you were going to say Untethered Soul, because that's kind of been, that was my Bible for a year.
That's the one that he's more well known for, I think. I couldn't get through that book
reason. So many times. It's totally tattered.
But The Surrender Experiment was definitely, and I read it many years ago. But anyway, back to your question of why I was nomading. It was because I was living in Northern Virginia, and that part of the country will always be home for me. It holds a special place in my heart. And my driver's license still says Arlington, Virginia. My license plates are still Virginia. But I wanted to go somewhere else. Like I felt like my time there was finished for now, because I've left several times before and come back. But for now, but I didn't know where I wanted to go. And so that's where I came up with the idea of, well, what if I do some house sitting, which is usually involves taking care of animals. Like, you're not just taking care of a house. It's usually got animals associated with it, which is cool because both of my cats had passed away in 2022. And I was like, cool, I can go, I have the freedom now. And so I don't have to be responsible for or to anyone else. And I can go and play with other people's cats and get my kitty fix and have a place to stay and explore different areas to see where I might want to live. So that was the whole purpose. I didn't really leave too much. I was mostly in the southeast part of the US.
Okay.
I was in Kentucky. I was in Ohio to visit friends. So I wasn't always just looking because Ohio was never really in the running. But but I had friends there and they lobbied hard to get me to move to Cincinnati. No. But mostly the southeast and all over the Carolinas. And that's where, yeah, I ended up in Charlotte.
Beautiful. It did the Biltmore in, where's that at?
Asheville.
No, in Asheville. Asheville, just a couple of, it was about a month ago now. A month ago, I was there. And then I went into Gatlinburg, Tennessee and stayed in the mountains for a week. And I did that at Christmas time. A friend had invited me to stay there. I said, oh, I want to come see the Smoky Mountains when there's no snow on the ground. Yeah. So the beautiful country there. I have not spent a lot of time there. I lived out west. I lived in Nevada for 15 years. So I've done a lot in Arizona and Nevada and Utah and New Mexico and a lot of that part. So I'm not that familiar with the East Coast, but I'm in Minnesota right now. I have, like you said, fond place in my heart. I come back here every single year, but my license plate says Florida. I drive an orange car with an orange, you know, like In God We Trust license plate. Orange
is coordinated
color. It's the sunrise. It's the sunset. It's that color that I like. That's how do you start your day and how do you finish your day? It matters. What last question, and then we're going to talk business a little bit. What does home look like for you today? You said you're no longer a nomad, but what does home look like for you today?
Home looks like community. Because when I was out nomading, I felt an acute lack of community. And actually, even though Northern Virginia is home for me, when I was living there this past time, the four years before I nomaded, I didn't feel like I had a very tight-knit community around me.
Yeah.
You know, some friends here and there, but it's a very transitionary area. And so while I was nomading, everywhere that I was, I didn't belong anywhere. You know, I'd be somewhere for a week or 2 weeks or, you know, even a month, whatever it was, but I didn't belong there. Mm-hmm. And so I very intentionally was looking for where I could build community. And I found it. And I have done that in the past 9 months since I moved here. Community is like, people are like, wait, how long have you lived here? Wow. Like, they can't believe, because I've built such expansive, I guess, community. And that was intentional. This is what happens when you step into things intentionally. Mm-hmm. And so Charlotte as a whole, community, my apartment, my intention was to build a nest. And I have done that as well.
Love it. Yeah. I did a post just this week about somebody asked, what is your priority in life right now? And I guess it wasn't a post, it was a comment. And it was like community, exactly what you said, community, because we, as human beings, we have the desire to belong.
Yes.
You know, the famous quote that everybody shouts, we need to be seen and heard and know that we say what matters. I think that came from Oprah, or at least she's credited with it, but it's that belonging that we get. And it's interesting that you say that. I find that the easiest way for me to build community is to bring people together with food. Like every place I've gone, when I first got to New Smyrna Beach, I got there the first or second week in November. And then it was a condo community and I was in an Airbnb there. And they had on the bulletin board that they were having a Thanksgiving meal and you needed to bring something. So I brought something, showed up at the meal, and instantly I met 30 people in there. And people, you know, who are you? What do you do? Oh, I'm nomadic. And I'm just, I'm going to be here for, you know, this many months. And then they introduced me to everybody that was in that room and we all ate together and they continued to have meals together. And I think when we can invite people in, it might be scary to bring people together, but somehow, even if you have to meet in a park, if you don't want people in your house, if you can sit down and have a meal with somebody. I read one time that it's the most intimate thing you can do besides having sex with somebody. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the most intimate thing you can do is actually eat with somebody. And so there's this kind of bond, a soul connection, because
Yeah.
we're nurturing our bodies, we're feeding ourselves, and you're doing it in the presence of somebody else, and there's this connection that happens. So I've
Yeah.
built community every place that I was, you know, whether it was in Tennessee or in, you know, I was in Lake of the Ozarks for a couple of weeks, and everything has been built around dining. I try to get myself into places where we can eat together. Or if I'm in a restaurant eating by myself, I order an appetizer and say, put half on my plate and take the other half and send it to that table over there. And people oftentimes will come over and join me, or they'll at least say hi and we'll have a 10-minute conversation. But it's like this instant connection, this community can happen. Now, it's not lifelong friend community, but some people I've stayed in touch with for many, many months. So.
Yeah, well, humans are wired to connect interpersonally. So all of this virtual stuff that we do is good and it's not the same.
Yeah.
And so another reason why I was nomading was it gave me the opportunity to meet up with people that I had only known virtually and meet up with them and have coffee or have a meal or whatever it was. And it's also the reason why I started hosting gratitude dinners here in Charlotte to bring people together. And over gratitude as the theme, even more powerful.
Yeah. I teach a wellness workshop on Saturday mornings. And last year I did a 600-mile trip through Wisconsin for all the people that live there that come to that meeting on Saturday mornings. And I showed up at the door, knocked and said, hi. And they're like, and they give me a big hug. It's like, come in, let me feed you. So I love that. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And folks, I hope you get to experience some of this stuff. Experience some surrender in your life. Where can you surrender? Who can you invite to have a meal with you? And how are you settled into your community? And do you need to expand your reach for that? Shifting gears. Fine is a four-letter word.
Yes,
What
it is.
inspired that title? And tell me about your podcast. You're on mine, but let's share with the folks. Like, what do you talk about on your podcast?
Yeah, I've been hosting Fine is a Four-Letter Word for a little more than 4 years, coming up on episode 200. And it started because, one, a lot of the conversations I was having with my friends as we were getting into our 50s was, you know, life is fine. It's fine. It really, for me, going back even a couple years before that, my mom passed away, and it's been 11 years now. She was only 73 years old. And after she passed, I started thinking, how do I want my life to be? If I only have another 25 years, what do I want it to look like? And how do I want the next 20 years to be, you know, do I want the next 20 years to be the same as the last 20? Not that there was anything wrong with the last 20. They were fine. And do I want to just live a life of everything is fine? And so if I don't want to live it the same, how will I change it?
Beautiful. So are you interviewing guests with that, or this is your perspective? What is the...
Oh, yeah. It is primarily an interview show, and it's people, it's stories from people of a time in their life when they said everything was fine and it was not fine at all. And I have been blessed and honored to hear the most incredible stories, because you know that the podcast studio, even though it's virtual, is a very intimate space. And people tell me things all the time. Oh, I never told anybody that, or I haven't thought about that since I was 8 years old. Oh my gosh, I never put those things together. It's a lot of revelation happening for the guest, but it is the incredible stories and the range of stories, because everybody has a story.
Yeah.
Some people's fine is, it wasn't even fine. Like, you wouldn't even say it was fine. It was beyond.
It's just a word. Yeah. That we throw
out.
But
the whole reason is that exactly when we meet up in our society, it's like, hey, Lisa, how are you doing? I'm fine. Anytime. And it's just the throwaway word that people use. And anytime somebody uses it, they're not fine.
No.
Like if you were doing better than fine, you'd be like, oh my gosh, fantastic. I'm super excited about this. Whatever it is. If you just say fine, it's not fine.
Yeah.
And on the other side, people who hear you say that don't usually dig in. Oh,
yeah.
What's going on? You know, they just let it go.
Yes, and I am not that person. I always say, "Ooh, you can't use that word with me. You can never use that word with me. I need to know more because there's something deeper. Come on, let's go have coffee. Come on, let's go have something to eat." And so, do you do that? Because I mean, this is the world that you've created. This is the world that you live in. You're bringing folks into this fine community. Do you push the envelope with people when you're out and about? When somebody says, "I'm doing fine," do you take that to the next level, or do you let it pass?
Nobody usually says I'm fine to me, especially
Okay.
if they know I
Interesting.
have this show. But if they did say it, depending, I mean, if it was like a clerk in a store, I would let it go because I'm not gonna, there's a line behind me, you know, I don't know. But if I was at a networking event and somebody said it, I would dig
Push
in.
it. Yeah. Yeah, even a clerk in a store, if somebody said, "I'm fine," I'm horrible about this, and I know I shouldn't do this, but I reach out and kind of grab their arm or their wrist or their hand, or I'll put my hand next to theirs and say, "Well, I hope that the rest of your day becomes joyful and more empowered." You know, so like leave them with something. I just can't even stop there when somebody says that, because we have a finite number of days and nights and moments, and they go so fast. If you're living in fine, you're missing out on everything that life has to offer. And we can shift some of that with the power of our language and our self-talk, which I said we're going to get here. How the words we use shape our reality. And fine is on my do not. When I was a kid, my dad would slap our hands if we said, "I can't, I can't." He was is he'd slap your hand and say, "Really? Really? Now go do it." You know, there were certain words that we were not allowed to use. Yeah. So I'm very aware of conscious language. By no means am I perfect at it, but friends know, and I talk about conscious language. So if they catch me using the, I call them poor me or pity words, poor me or having a pity party. In fact, I was divorced after being with my husband for 29 years, and I was having pretty consistent pity parties. And I would have a friend who would call periodically, and she'd say, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm sitting on the couch." She said, "5 minutes, I'm setting the timer. And if you don't stop that pity party in 5 minutes, I'm going to come over there and dump water on your head." Or, you know, she'd come up with something elaborate. She was hysterical, but she really helped pull me out of those pity parties. It's like, it happened. What are you going to do about it? Like, let's not sit and dwell in it. So
I
let's go there.
agree.
Self-talk.
I think it's important because people will say, well, it's just semantics. No, it's not. It is not. And the other thing I wanted to mention is that it's okay to feel the emotions though. Like, sure, not marinate in them for, years. But if you're feeling sad or frustrated or upset or guilty or like, not guilty is not necessary, but the emotions, like whatever the emotions are, it could be guilt, it could be shame, feel it, feel it. Like, and then let it go.
Yeah, the
Like the
pity
only
part is
way
getting stuck in
through,
it or medicating it. Medicating is another one. Yeah. Like, let's experience all of life's emotions, the good, the bad. Yeah, there's nothing
Yeah,
wrong
I
with
want to
it.
make sure that listeners are hearing, like, we're not just like, oh, stop complaining or
Don't
stop
shove it in.
crying.
Don't stuff it down, because that causes an expl that causes dis-ease in the body. We know that most illnesses have an emotional component to them. They have dis-ease or create dis-ease in the body. But it's the conscious language that I want to talk about, because you talked about that as part of who you are and the coaching that you used to do. Conscious language. So how does conscious language fit into your conversations, into your life, into how you work with folks? The influence that you're having on corporations and their employees using a powerful language and powerful self-talk.
It's about being intentional with your words. Again, we come back to this word intentional and paying, which could be interchangeable with conscious, being aware of what you're saying. And so when people, to me, it makes me like it feels like, oh, I don't like that word, but the whole word around want, like I want to do this. Or, and even worse, try. I'll try. Okay, go ahead and try. What is it? Yoda. There is do or do not, no try. That was paraphrased badly because he said it in a different way. But essentially, there is no try. Like, try to move that pencil and then somebody will move it. Well, no, you didn't try. You did it. There is no try. And no. So that kind of sets me off. But that whole want, I want to do this.
Yeah.
Do you have an intention to do it, or are you just thinking about doing it? Because want creates more want.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want, and then the universe will deliver to you wanting.
What
and you will never
can we
get
replace
there.
That with, you know, things that come to mind are manifest, create, develop.
Yeah.
Like, there's
intent. Yeah.
Yeah.
Attempt. I mean, when you're doing try, attempt. I'm attempting.
Yeah.
It is really important to pay attention to the words, because your subconscious is listening, mm-hmm. always listening. And so whatever you're saying out loud is giving even more power to what you're saying internally. And so it's important to be very careful about the words you're using, especially when you're talking to yourself, but also when you're talking to other people. You can't take words back. You know, that kid thing we used to say, sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me or something.
Yep.
That is not true.
Yeah.
They can be very damaging. Yeah. They can equally be very empowering.
And that's why we've had such a movement with the affirmations, and, you know, so many motivational speakers were talking about affirmations. It started with that. For my first exposure was probably Zig Ziglar,
mm-hmm.
and see in the book, See You at the Top, and him talking about stinking thinking. Like, my dad always used to talk about stinking thinking, or I should. And he would make comments like, stop shooting on yourself.
Yes, exactly.
you know, there's.
I'm very conscious of that word as well. And sometimes I catch myself still using it.
Yeah, rather than I choose to. Either you choose not to, or you choose to, but there is no should. You get to make a choice.
It would behoove. I love that word. Nobody, it's not used enough, right? It would behoove you to.
Yeah, that's awesome. Zen Rabbit, that's your brand. You know, you founded that company. Tell us about that.
Zen Rabbit was founded back in 2003 when I was making these gratitude cookies that I mentioned earlier. And the gratitude cookies were based on a family recipe, kind of a cross between a butter and a sugar cookie. And I was customizing the packages for businesses as a way for them to say thank you to clients and referral sources. And that's where the name Zen Rabbit first came into use.
Yeah.
And there's a whole story about that on my website, but as in the past 20, however many years that is, it's been through several iterations. So I think I'm on Zen Rabbit 4.0 now or something. So, but as a name, because I have a marketing background, before I was entrepreneurial, I was in marketing, corporate communications. Nobody ever forgets the name Zen Rabbit.
Yeah.
And so it's just carried through with all the different iterations of my business. And I know you probably can't see because it's way back there and it's kind of hiding behind my bookcase, but there is a Florida license plate that says Zen Rabbit. And the one that is on my car now for Virginia, also Zen Rabbit.
Yeah. It's such a unique name. And I thought, what does she do with this? You know, when I was putting together the money, I was like, I need to know more about that. So of course, you know, I had to go figure it out and search for it. But the gratitude has played such an important role.
Yes.
And you talk about stillness and you talk about tea. When I think of tea, I think of stillness. It's it's contemplative. You know, when I have my coffee, it's generally at sunrise. Even in the evenings, I love sunset. There's, you know, when the sun is starting to set, I was staying with a friend of mine in New Smyrna Beach. We watched the sunset almost every single night, and we were on the beach so we could walk to the beach. We could sit out on the balcony. We'd just walk out to the steps and we would watch that sunset, and we didn't need to talk. It was just this stillness that we got to experience. The day is ending. Let's reflect upon that. Those are my two favorite times of the day. So my question is, how do all these things play a role in your transformational work?
The gratitude for sure is, I mean, it's so powerful as a concept, but as an energy, the energetic vibration of gratitude, I've been told, I've read, I've studied, is the highest. I've had some people say love.
Some people say, yeah.
So there's some dispute there.
Yeah.
At the same time, gratitude, I mean, you could say they're the same, that gratitude is love.
Yeah.
Gratitude, I've had people ask me, not everybody feels things the same way. So when you talk about getting into the feeling of gratitude, sometimes people are confused. Well, what does that feel like? Oh, you know what? It feels like joy. That's what it feels like. And so getting yourself into this place of gratitude, no matter what is happening, whether your circumstances are what you would like to have, or whether they are your unpreferred circumstances, as someone has recently taught me to say, feeling gratitude regardless. I am so grateful that this is where I am right now, because everything that's happening right now is happening for me, even if I don't understand why, or you know, why it's not my preferred circumstance, I can still be grateful for what is right now.
Yeah.
And when you are in that feeling of gratitude, your energetic vibration is as high as it can get. Mm-hmm. And when you're in that high energetic vibration, that's what brings preferred circumstances to you. So gratitude is just, it's also been a through line. And in my business, for sure. And I mentioned that I after my mom passed, and I like don't want to hurt, like, it's like, this is significant.
Say, my mom passed 14 months ago. That's the month that I left and started becoming a nomad. So
yeah,
I know exactly where you're coming from.
When people say, what introduced you to gratitude? Like, yeah. I could never really pinpoint it. And in thinking about it later, after, probably a few years after my mom passed, the last words she spoke, I'm gonna get choked up, were thank you to the hospice worker.
Yeah.
So I must have unconsciously, subconsciously seen her operating that way in the world. And then, so my dad passed last August, so not even quite a year ago.
Mine,
and I
was reversed. My dad passed first, and 9 months later, my mom passed last year.
Okay. Well, yeah. So it was, I mean, my parents weren't still together, but so 11 months ago. And because I was nomading, I had the opportunity. I was there for both of my parents in
Me
the
too.
Room. And the last words he spoke were the same.
Wow.
Like, what the hell? I never realized, like, that I was, what's the word I'm looking for? Just like absorbing this lesson about gratitude.
Yeah.
And so I'm constantly talking about it because I think it's so important for a successful life. You can have success in terms of material things, but if you don't feel gratitude for them, I feel a little sorry for you.
Well, you're always hustling. You're always chasing. You know, you can never sit, be at peace and enjoy.
That's
what gratitude gives us. It's the greatest gift. I did write a book, and that book, it started out as a memoir to the journey I walked with my mom and dad for being a care provider for them for 7 years, and then them passing 9 months apart. So much gratitude. Like, I got to rearrange my life, and you know, whatever money I had, I poured into being able to have that experience. Like, I left what I was doing. I did a little bit of virtual work. I tried to bring in a little bit of money, but it was really all about them ending their life and that journey home. I even have the title of the book. It's called The Long Goodbye, but I can't seem to sit down and write the memoir. But what you just expressed was what I think I was missing, what my takeaway was from that experience to be with them. When my dad would start reminiscing and tell me stories that I had never heard before, I'd be on my phone going, I have to cancel. Here's my calendar. Please reschedule. And I'd shift my whole day, and I would be fully present. And we would eat, and we would have tea, or we would, you know, we were just in conversation. And same with my mom. She had brain cancer, went blind. And so she couldn't see. I was her ears, her eyes. I was the person that dressed her and bathed her and fed her and all of the things. And to actually surrender to that process and be grateful that I got to have that experience rather than what so many of us have been programmed to do is put them in a nursing home. You know, when we look to other countries like Japan where, or even China, where their elders are part of the family, like they come back together, they live with their own kids and their grandkids and they pour into their grandkids. The reason I'm a Floridian is I moved my mom and dad to Florida so they could be closer to their nieces, their great grandchildren, their grandchildren and great grandchildren. They're my nieces and nephews, so I say that wrong. But yeah, I said, I'll take you anywhere in the world you want to go when you know, things kind of had rolled over and we knew there wasn't a lot of time left. And they got there and they surged. They had, you know, we were thinking not long and, you know, 3.5 years later, they were still there. So it's amazing how we can shift the energy when we surrender to what's happening in our life and fully experience it, take on the emotions, grieving, sorrow, happiness, joy. We don't need to medicate the world and become numb to it when we can have those experiences, move through them and get into the experience of gratitude. And it may start slow, but it raises our energy. It raises our vibration of who we are and who we can be and how we can live in the world.
Yeah. It's important to note that surrender doesn't mean giving up.
No.
It's not giving up. It's accepting
mm-hmm.
and not fighting against, you know, what you resist persists.
Mm-hmm.
Just let go. Let go.
See yeah, I think there's a difference like from like here we're pushing back. And to me, surrender is like the open arm, open hands.
Yeah, open
arms,
to receiving.
Like, mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. How do you know when you've outgrown the life you're living? You know, like I was living one way and then this whole transformation happened of, yeah, my life doesn't look anything like it used to. How do you know when you, and I'll use the word outgrown. You can plug in any word you want. Maybe it's not outgrown, but how do you know, like I hear so many people say they're longing for, in the opening I talked about, it feels like something's missing. I have all the money. I have the great job. Mm-hmm. I have the great title. I have. Something's missing. I run into so many high achievers. And something is missing. How do we know that we've give me a different word if it's not that, but outgrown the life you're living and you wanting to move into this new space. Maybe it's a spiritual space. Maybe it's a greater, deeper connection with the world we come from or the people that are in it.
That's one of the reasons one of the two reasons I really started the podcast was my podcast was because, or one of, yeah, I wanted people to understand that one, there's nothing wrong with you. Mm-mm. And two, that you're not alone. But going back to number one, there's nothing wrong with you when people are looking around and saying, I have this beautiful family. I have this job that's so incredible. And I live in this beautiful place and I'm not happy. I'm not happy. So there must be something wrong with me. No, there's nothing wrong with you. The soul is designed to create and grow consistently throughout your entire life. So this is the sign that your soul is longing for growth. Mm-hmm. And it's time for you to explore how you can step into that. Instead of shying away from it, instead of saying, oh, I could never do that. What did I just see earlier today? And it was on social media and it was somebody posting the question. Oh, right. It was one of my past guests who also hosts a show. He had a guest on who asks the question, what would have to be true for whatever it is to happen? What would have to be true for me to be able to go out and nomad for a year? Like what would have to be, and maybe you can switch the word true. What would have to happen or what would the circumstances need to be? And opening to possibility instead of shutting it down. I could never do that because I still have kids in school or because I have to work because like you're just limiting yourself then. What if you opened to
it's that conscious language thing again, isn't it? It's like,
yeah.
What question are we asking? Are we asking the question from the negative or are we asking from the what can't happen? Or are we asking the question from there's a real possibility? Like I could make that happen. There's a real possibility that I could be a nomad if blah, blah, blah. Or creating connection and community in a disconnected world. Like how do we connect with more people rather than being disconnected from our world? How do we start having these conversations? There's a lot of people who are being nomadic. I cannot believe how many people have come out of the woodwork and said, oh yeah, I've been living in an RV. Had no idea. I've been doing business with this person for over a year. You didn't know I lived in an RV. And I was like, I had no idea. Cause you know, you use the fake background and like, and it never came up. I didn't ask, where did you live? What does life look like for you? But when I started outwardly expressing my lifestyle, other people just came out of the woodwork. So that's that connection, the community and the connection in this disconnected world. If you're really wanting to desire, if you desire something, let people know what you desire. And those other people who are experiencing it may show up and show you how you can do that. You know,
You just brought up a really good point of the what if question, because most people ask, I can never do that. What if all these bad things happened? Like, what if I, ran out of gas? Like, I don't know, ridiculous things. What if I ran out of gas? What if I, needed a new
Had
phone,
hives from
whatever?
head to toe while I was in Africa and no doctor and no telephone. That happened.
However, what if you asked the what if question as what if the best thing happened? What if you got to experience all these amazing other people? And what if you got to see all of these beautiful places that you've only heard about? What if? Why do we always go to the negative what if and the worrying? And by the way, are you aware of what worrying? Well, now I just ruined it. I was going to say, I tried, never mind. What do you call visualizing? We're told to visualize that that's a good way to put out into the universe what you would like to have, is to visualize. And so I was going to say, what do you call visualizing negative outcomes? But I already ruined it. It's worrying.
Worry.
Yeah, it's the same. So do the opposite. Put out into the world the visualization of what you would like to have instead of what you're afraid might happen, which
Even if,
95% of the time never happens.
never happens. Even if you have to what if that negativity, go back in time. Like when you're asking those what if questions, there's a strong possibility that you've already experienced that what if in the past and you came through it with shining colors. You were able to find that courage and be brave and all of those things that we start to fear. You've probably already experienced it, you know, if, especially my audience, you know, age range, we're a little bit more mature. Maybe not, but this may not be true for young people, but you see that even with kids when they fall down and they get skinned knees and the next time they do it, they can oftentimes shake it off because they already had that experience. They know what it's like to be on the other side of it. But as adults, sometimes we forget, you know, I've already had hard times. I've already had trauma. I've already experienced grief when my grandmother died. This is a familiar feeling and I certainly survived it. I was okay on the other side of it. So giving ourselves permission to be okay in that experience sometimes and work our way through it. The other one I think of is how kindness, even to strangers, is a radical act of healing to us. My mom, you know, on her deathbed, like we know she doesn't have any time. She had fallen and broke her pelvis, and we're in the hospital, we're in rehab. And there wasn't a lot that they could do, but I couldn't manage her at that time physically. So I every single day I would go there. My sister and I would be there for every single meal, and I would put her in the wheelchair and we would go visit all the other people in the nursing home. And my mom would just light up because she's pouring into, she's dying. She has limited amount of days, but the joy that she brought to people who are recovering and, you know, going through some tough stuff, but probably not dying. You know, we were in a rehab center. We weren't in a nursing home place. So probably not dying. And so to see that, to watch that is amazing to me, how even these radical acts of, or I'm sorry, these acts of kindness can cause these radical acts of healing in people. So, and that one of the ladies that we visited still stays in touch to me. I think she's in her 80s,
Oh, that's so
and she's
sweet.
on Facebook. Her family put her on Facebook. She still reaches out to me, and you know, when I post something about my mom on my mom's birthday, she sh shared some stories with me and stuff. So, like, there's these connections that happen when we show kindness to other people. Thoughts?
I just interviewed, I published a couple weeks ago an interview on my show with Neil Donald Walsh, who is the author of Conversations with God books and all of those. And we talked about this and about this giving to others and how it affects us. And what it comes down to is what we do for others, we're doing for ourselves, because in the universal energy, we are all one. Yeah. And so when you do an act of kindness for someone else, of course it makes you feel good, because you're essentially, we're all one. You're doing a kindness for yourself, really.
It comes back. Whatever. I think my dad always used to say, whatever you put out comes back tenfold. Yep. Are you sure you want to put that into the world? He would say that all the time. Are you sure you want to put that into the world? You don't want to show up with a happy face. You want everybody to frown at you? Like, you know, a smile was mandatory.
Kindness though is intentional.
It is.
It is intentional. And we get to choose every day how to show up in the world. And our default tends to be negativity as a whole.
That is that the brain is built that way for protecting us, right? You know, our amphibian brain.
Yes, and I think society and social media especially has reinforced that.
Sure.
However, that doesn't mean that we have to stay on default. Sure. Again, coming back to being intentional, you get to choose every day when you wake up, how do I want my day to be? How do I want to show up in the world today?
To the best of my ability. This has been a great conversation. Thank you so much. I'm going to leave you one final question. Let's wrap this up. And the question is, why is now always the right time to begin again?
Because that's all we have.
Yeah.
There is only now. So, and what's that? I don't know. I don't think it's a biblical saying, but I think it's, you know, one of the wise men of, or wise women of thousands of years ago. If not now, when?
Yeah. If not you, who?
Yeah. Yeah. This is the only time we have right now, this minute, this minute, this minute, this minute, this minute.
Yeah.
When else are you going to do it? Someday is not a day on the calendar. So now.
Beautiful.
Works great.
If students want to get in touch with you or find you, we know the podcast, fine, is a four-letter word. Where else can folks find you?
The best place to find me is on LinkedIn, because I hang out there all the time. So yeah, Perfect. Go find me on LinkedIn.
Lovely. And we'll have her links to all of the different social places that you can find her as well. Do you want me to put your email in the notes as well or no?
Sure.
Okay.
Somebody wants to email me.
Yep. All of her contact information will be in the notes. If you can't find the notes for whatever reason, but you can find me, make sure you reach out and I will get you connected. Closing thoughts from me. You know, Lori reminds us that fine might be familiar, but it's not where the magic lives. Whether you're sipping tea or sitting in stillness or searching for your next step, the path to fulfillment starts with honest reflection and a willingness to build those castles in the sky. Build those foundations for your life. If you've felt seen, stirred, or soothed by today's episode, share it with somebody who needs a little bit of insight too. And by all means, come back next week, because we'll have another extraordinary guest. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much for joining me. And thank you, Lori, for being with me.
Thanks for joining me on A Bit of Insight. To get more involved with our wellness community, grab a copy of my book, Live Well, Travel Far, or to explore our travel offerings, visit the website at insightcenterforwellness.com. And if today's episode gave you something to think about, leave a review and please share it with a friend. This is Lisa Mosby reminding you to live well, travel far, and always follow your insight.